Welcome to the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. Today's Great Conversation is with Claire Thomas. The Final Draft Great Conversations podcast is all about books, writing, and literary culture. I'm Andrew Popel, and every week I broadcast Final Draft from the studios of 2SER in Sydney. Final Draft is dedicated to exploring Australian writing from debut authors to household names. Every week we look into the issues that drive our storytelling and help you discover more from the books that you love. These are the stories that make us who we are. 2SER broadcasts from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and I'm recording on the lands of the Darug and Gunungurra people. I want to acknowledge the traditional owners of those lands and pay my respects to their ongoing connection to their lands. This is stolen land, and treaty was never reached in Australia. Claire Thomas is the author of Fugitive Blue, which won the Dobby Award for Women Writers and was longlisted for the Miles Franklin Literary Award. Today, she's joining me to discuss her latest novel, the already critically acclaimed The Performance. In The Performance, three women attend a staging of Samuel Beckett's play Happy Days. Inside the theatre is air-conditioned to a chill, while outside bushfires rage around the city. On the stage, a woman is trapped to her waist inside an expanding mound, happily exploring her past through the items in her bag. Within the audience, the women's minds drift out across time. Margot considers her family, expanded to include a new grandson, even as her husband slowly moves into his old age. Ivy thinks about her world and how far she's come from the person she was at uni. While Summer wishes she could pay closer attention to the stage, her job is to usher guests to their seats, but her mind is miles away as the fires circling the city move closer to her girlfriend's family home. Now, this is a two-part conversation. Claire and I had a fantastic long chat, so I've split it up. Join me in the first part as Claire and I consider the idea of performance, the way we all put on a performance, and what it means. And we also reminisce about sitting in the audience of just an incredible performance and enjoying the process of thinking and having art wash over you. Join me today as we discover Claire Thomas's The Performance.
Hello, Claire speaking.
Hello, Claire. It's Andrew Popel calling from 2SER. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. This is an this is an absolute joy to be talking about this book. I just loved it.
Oh, good.
Little bit of a tear as I turned the final page. And whilst I see what you're doing, like, how dare you leave me hanging like that?
Oh, well, that's good.
One of the things I love about the sort of the tactile experience of reading books, and you just don't get this on digital devices, is you feel the story ending in your fingers.
Yes, yes. Mm. Oh, I totally agree with you. And I'm very thingy about the final page. I was really insistent that there was going to be some white space before the acknowledgement. Mm. I have this thing as a reader, when you finish something and if you're emotionally involved, and then straight away there's some totally different voice being all quirky about their, you know, their loved ones. And I hate that. And I feel like that's part of the kind of, you need to just turn the page and you know it's coming, but
you couldn't care less if their husband or wife looked after the cats while you wrote. You just like...
No, it's like you don't want to think about that. You don't want to be thrown into that when you're still trying to wallow in the moment of the book. Well, I'm glad you had that reaction.
Were you aiming for that theatrical feeling where you know the end of the and you sort of you don't want the performance to end?
I think that that's inevitable. That given the structure, I mean, I could have done some awful epilogue. You know, once the play was over. 6 months later.
Summer found April in a shell outside.
Yeah, totally. No, I wanted that sense of kind of the contained time and space and, yeah, all those feelings that come with that. I have been surprised that the number of people have said to me that they find it like a page-turner. That was not deliberate, or I wasn't kind of like, I'll leave you with a cliffhanger. You know, I worked for a very brief amount of time as a storyliner for a soap opera, so I was like, you know, you always have to have a cliffhanger before the ad break.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there was nothing like, and you can learn those sorts of techniques and use, but I didn't do that on purpose, and I found that quite strange, and I was worried when that sort of came up as a way that they were going to talk about the book. But then it seems that that is a lot of people's experience. But other people are reading it very slowly. So I think the pace of it is curious to me. It's a mystery to me, the way the reader experiences pace. And I think,
very
individual.
I drew my own parallels with the theatrical experience and no more so than that ending. The last, however it works out, you know, I can't even remember if it's a whole page or not, but it's really not even, but it's kind of, you get that experience in some theatrical productions where it's almost like a fugue-like state where the buzz of whatever's happening is dimmed and you've got the scene in front of you happening maybe in, it feels slow motion or in silence and characters kind of move away, like they're almost like they're moving away from their own characters. So some are running off feels almost dreamlike, even though we know it's something that's being experienced.
Yeah. Oh, that's, well, there's also like a tense shift. So the whole thing, I think, and as you say, I think it's only like a page or a page and a half at the very sort of, as the play's ending, then it suddenly goes into the future tense. So I think that has that effect of, the dreaminess, maybe. I always wanted it to end with that image for some reason.
Because as the performance comes to a close, one of your audience members, Ivy, tries to decipher an image. Something about Beckett has always puzzled her. Now, before I go ahead and try and do exactly the same thing to your text, I actually want to appreciate a really early point in the performance where Margot muses how gratifying it is to wallow in one's thoughts. She was responding to that way that art kind of hits us. It's been so long for many of us to simply be in an art space, to let those ideas come. Can you tell me about your experience of this magic of wallowing?
Oh, yes, that's a lovely thing to consider. I suppose I wallow mainly in books and I read a lot. I also, the visual arts I'm very engaged in, and I really do love galleries. I like them when they're empty though, so that's often quite difficult, or at least not really busy. And then the performing arts, there's that particular thing about going into a space to see a performance where you are captive, in a sense. And I wanted to capture that in the novel. And if you're not in the mood, that can be a bad thing. You know, it's an endurance. It can, if the performance is not interesting to you. But if you are wanting to be there, it is quite a blessed kind of opportunity to be in the one space for a couple of hours. And for the women in my book, there's that sense of, well, particularly Margot, that she's very busy, and she's actually, she enjoys the forced capturing of herself. You know, she has to sit still, and she has to sit there and she can think about what she wants. She's watching the play, but it's a kind of opportunity for contemplation that, and the only distraction is her own diverging thoughts.
She's almost infuriating. She's almost infuriating, though. She still kind of does this mental Rolodex, though. She's so organized in her thinking.
Well, she likes to think she is. I mean, this is the thing. She's a professional thinker. So she's a literature professor who's very successful and senior. And so she thinks for her life, her vocation. So she does consider herself someone who can kind of manage her own mind. But whether that is true or not is up to contemplation, I suppose. But yeah, she tries to be very systematic, but it doesn't really last throughout the whole play. She goes off in places she doesn't want to go, despite her sort of telling herself that she can compartmentalize.
Yeah, that idea of control too, and even within the space of the seat. I remember fondly going to the theater and how you could, you know, simultaneously feel alone in your thoughts the way we've just described, but also crushed together with so many others in the crowded seating, fighting for armrests.
Yes, and I love that quality about it, and that was the sort of enforced intimacy of it and the proximity that you have to strangers. And you can feel them, you know, their arms, or you can smell them, you can hear them. And oftentimes most of the time you don't know anything about them. But then there's this shared experience, and anything could happen in the theatre or on the stage. And there's a kind of precarious intensity to that, which is quite exciting when it's working. And so I was definitely kind of curious about all that aspect of theatre, and also the quick judgments you can make. You know, someone's got their elbow on your armrest, so obviously, you know, he's an asshole. Or someone's coughing, so they're trying to ruin your night. You know, and those sort of I wanted to cut through some of the easy judgments we all make about other people from the tiniest moments or behaviours. Yeah,
I didn't want to draw too long a bow too early, but since you've gone there, I was really fascinated. I was fascinated by, I mean, if we think about theatre and the art of theatre, for thousands of years, it has been about putting forward a facade, or dare I say, a performance that has very quick and easy signals. I mean, if people think of the traditional comedy and tragedy masks, and then you absolutely begin that interrogation from the word go. Margot sits next to a man who has a very prominent tattoo, who very prominently takes up the armrest, who seems to be so many things. And then throughout, we're constantly confronted. Each of the characters, it seems, has to confront an idea about something that they have made a snap judgment about.
Yes.
What is it? What is it about these performances? And we all know we put on these performances.
Well, there's sort of two aspects to that question. That was my initial impetus for the whole book, was this the idea of sharing a theatre with fellow audience members, and the assumptions that we make, the judgments that we make, and then getting past that to something more complex and nuanced within the people. And in terms of the performance of the life, if that's kind of where we're going, I mean, that's just everywhere, and it's not that each of the women, you know, the three main characters, they don't have a single role that they're trying to play in life. They've got multitudes of roles in every context, and some of that's just social conditioning, or some of it is politeness, or some of it is cultural assumption, and so there's the way that they operate, and the way they successfully or unsuccessfully perform in different ways, and then even further than that, I think there's a bit of self delusion going on as well, and sort of the kind of, as much as we can mislead other people or present sort of the particular version of ourselves to other people, I think that that can also happen within ourselves, you know. So you have an idea of what you are or what you should be, and you believe that you are, and then someone else, you'll encounter someone else, and it can be very small, and they'll just throw that off. It's like, oh, So there's a lot going on with that that idea with theatre and literal and symbolic performance. Yeah.
Each of the women is also very, very willing to explore their own interpretations and at times acknowledge when they've gotten that performance so completely wrong. And one thing that really jumped out at me, and I want to be really careful about talking about the performance like you've written it to speak to a particular moment that the book happens to have been launched into, but you know, nationally there's this huge discussion around gender roles, and whereas we see that perhaps men are not willing to interrogate their own responses and their own interpretations and the like. In your three characters, you have each of them at times make a judgment, see a performance in a certain way. And then Ivy in particular really goes deep into the heart of it. And it strikes me that having that ability to make a quick judgment can be a matter of life and death, particularly if you are not a man in this world.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't think that the role of or how women are treated is a topical. I mean, to me, it's an eternal reality. And yes, in particular arenas, it's getting particular attention at the moment. But I think that. And what you say, though, the capacity to kind of interrogate your own behaviour. Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that that's, men like that. And I think it's big, of course, not all men, hashtag. But I think that when you are in a position of power, there's a sense of the norm is yourself. And so you're not made, your self-awareness or your self-consciousness is, perhaps less, kind of heightened because you don't get, you don't have to modify yourself because the way you operate is the dominant way. And I don't think this is just a male-female thing. That can be in terms of a race, in terms of, privilege of any kind.
It's quite often a power thing, and you don't have to look far to see who holds the power.
No, and I think that also, yes, these women are being very self-reflecting and very critical of themselves and recognizing kind of certain things about themselves that they don't like from their past or from their present, but it is only their thoughts, so we don't know how much they're really functioning, how much that sort of internal self-flagellation, which I think women really good at, how much of that actually translates to self-adjustment beyond their own thinking. I mean, who knows?
This might be a time, I'm not sure there's going to be a better time than to go to the central image of the theatre. There is a woman buried and immobile, facing out to the world with her questions and her optimism. It feels like there are so many ways to read Winnie, and your engagement with this through Margot, through Ivy, through Summer invites it in so many different ways. You don't need to hear every single way that I tried to read that. I was wondering what was important about this image to you.
Well, I honestly I like the idea that there were lots of different ways that you read it, and I'd rather I wanted to leave it well, it's a loaded image. It's an incredible, powerful, very straightforward but stunning concept of a woman buried up to her waist in the earth and then buried up to her neck in the earth. And there's so many kind of facets that resonate with that. And I do cover a lot, you know, talk about that a lot in the book. Even things like just the shape of the mound she's buried in reminds one of the characters of something she ate once. I mean, you know, there's those sort of minor resonances. And then there's far more significant connotations around the questions of mobility and of all kinds, social mobility, and because there's a lot that comes up with a couple of the characters, and stuckness. And also I think I drew out in a way that absolutely doesn't have to be there, the kind of ecological aspect of it. There's a very bright, you know, very bright light over this woman, very harsh, very bright light. So she's basically stuck in this glare. Yeah. And the kind of production that I've made my characters watch is defined as an eco-feminist production by someone involved in the theatre company. And so I wanted to kind of exaggerate those aspects of the text that is kind of there. So yeah, there's a sort of harshness. And then, so while there's this heating, inescapable environmental reality in that's kind of embodied in this woman, there's the other side of the kind of lack of capacity for people to respond to that. Mm. So here it's just you're sitting in a theatre, so you can't go and kind of help this person out because you're watching and you're watching it. But there's also that sense that the theatre space is a bubble, and it kind of is distancing from the reality. Yeah, sorry, this is just like I've gone layers upon layers upon layers here, but
we're frames, yeah, within so frames. It's all at the there.
Yes, well, that's it. Yeah, and if people read that, or that's good, but if they don't, that's fine too, I suppose. So,
I want to roll with this though, because I am interested, and I'm also very conscious of the way I've fallen into this language of the theatre to discuss a piece of literature that exists in a book. But I'm interested in your staging, because within the theatre, uh-huh, it's cold. Margot,
yes,
complains about this, but without the fires are raging. And despite the fact that the city's, you know, far from the firefront, the heat, the smoke, they're visceral. Margot feels it as a kind of discomfort. Summer is almost out of her mind with fear for her girlfriend, April. It's another form of being trapped. The heat feels trapping. There are people trapped by the fires. And I wondered, your staging is against this idea of environmental collapse and the impacts. Is this a part of our everyday life? Is that staging our lives writ large?
Yeah. Pick, yeah.
Awesome. A short answer is a good answer.
Next question. No, I mean, yes, I think that's absolutely something that I was trying to allude to. Yes. That,
It's interesting the way that kind of inverts, though, because you were talking there about this sense of being in an audience, watching something on the stage that you can't engage with. And sometimes, it often feels like this is part of the problem, that while we can see environmental collapse, we can see problems with the environment on screens. Also, we often look outside our window and say, okay, it's a little bit rainy today. Weren't they saying the rain was drying up? Or we don't live with that reality in our lives.
No. And that's that's what I mean. There's a kind of disconnect between the knowledge and the capacity to respond to the knowledge. And each of the women have a different kind of sense about the broader environmental state of the world. And I wanted to write about, I wanted to address that. I wanted to address the climate crisis, but I can't write sort of this. It's not my thing. I've got my limitations, and so I wanted to engage very deeply with just how people are feeling about it and what that means, because I think that's a kind of important and hopefully interesting thing. Yeah. And one of the characters is more, she's kind of got this, and she's resolved, she's actively contributing to various programs that, you know, she's funding environmental programs in certain ways to some extent. But, of course, she can only kind of do that and take action because she's got money to and the agency to have an impact. Yeah. So, and then the younger character is burdened by trying to be the perfect sort of eco-citizen. But then there's a part of her that kind of thinks, I don't know if that's the real problem, but, you know. So, yeah, it's all that.
Claire, right now I am going to borrow a leaf, or more appropriately 25 to 26 leaves from your book and stage an intermission. I am speaking. Okay. It's intermission time for this great conversation with Claire Thomas. Claire's new novel, The Performance, is out now from Hachette, and it experiences itself around a production of Samuel Beckett's Happy Days, so we are taking an intermission. Part two will be up very soon. Great Conversations is recorded on the lands of the Darug and Gunungurra people. The show is produced and presented by Andrew Popel. Stay in touch. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Just look for Final Draft 2SER. And if you subscribe in your podcast app, there is a new Great Conversation every week. To this week, it is a two-parter. I'm Andrew Popel. I will be back next week with more Great Conversations from Final Draft. Till then, happy reading.